I'm Teresa.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is The Criminally Obsessed,
a true crime podcast about crimes, criminals, and the absolute crazy. Hello, hello, obsessors. I'm sorry, I can't keep a straight face now. Hello, I forgot what the intro was, Ryan, for a second.
Oh my goodness. You want to try that again?
No, we're just going to keep going. So how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. I have no news for today.
Your life's been pretty boring.
My life's been, I work. I'm sorry. I'm a boring person.
You're not a boring person. You just, you know what? You need this lull in activity. Because last couple of years have been pretty busy.
I'm not trying to do therapy with you. Okay, so your birthday is Friday.
My birthday is Friday. And my husband is amazing. Oh. And so anybody that knows me knows that you don't have to buy me gifts. Don't trust me. I'm not going to turn down gifts. But I would rather you give me your time. So let's go do something. Let's go, you know, travel, experience things. Like, that's the stuff that I love to do. So for my birthday, my husband told me, because he cannot keep a secret, he was like, dress up Friday night because we're going out. I was like, dress up? Like,
there's nowhere around here to go dress up.
Where are we going to go dress up? Like, honestly, I am a shorts, flip-flop, t-shirt girl. Like, I hardly ever dress up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where are we going to go? And my first thought was, he was like, so the first thing he says is, it's something that we've never done before. So I was like, the murder mystery train.
No, that's something for you and me to do.
He was like, no. But instantly, that's what we here in our area, we have a murder mystery train. I've never been on it, but I've always wanted to. So I assumed that's what it was. He was like, no, that's not it. He was like, but it's something that you love. I was like, what the hell is that? Like, I could not think of it. He's like, do you just want to tell me? Or, you know, no. He was like, do you want me to just tell you? And I was like,
Yes.
And he was like, we're going to go have dinner and then we're going to go see a play. And I was like, oh, what play?
Dinner theater.
It's a dinner theater. And they are doing The Wizard of Oz, which is one of my favorite movies, like all time favorite. And so I'm really excited.
Have I ever told you I've never...
If you told me you've never seen The Wizard of Oz...
I've never watched it completely through.
What? What do you mean? Like, I don't understand. How is that possible?
I've never watched it.
Like, where do you stop watching it at?
Whenever I get distracted.
What the fuck?
Listen, I'm discovering I have severe ADHD week.
Okay, so if you've not seen The Wizard of Oz, you haven't seen Return to the Wizard of Oz either.
No, and I've never watched Wicked either.
Oh my God.
But I know every damn song in Wicked.
That's only because I made you listen to the soundtrack in the
car. I knew it before.
It's the best. Anyway, so I'm excited. I'm super excited because I've never been. And then tomorrow, which is the day before this comes out, we are going to go see a concert because my husband has been wanting to see them forever. It's the Rob Zombie Mudvayne Powerman 5000 concert.
So is Rob Zombie going to be there too?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Super duper excited. And then
Wednesday, your baby child.
And then Wednesday, my baby child is flying away from the nest, but will be returning.
Yeah. She's moving out temporarily.
She's going to go visit her brother and his wife for a little bit just to hang out, some new scenery, work, save up some money.
She gets to go experience adulthood.
But she'll be back. She will. So, yeah, that's what's going on in my world this week.
Okay.
And I'm super excited.
So, Teresa, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are jumping across the pond once again to do a story about the acid bath murderer.
Acid bath murder?
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of? So, there's this...
Oh, my God.
There's this viral video that went around in, like, 2009. And it's from this lady called Raven the Acid Bath Princess. And it's these girls just...
What?
It's these girls doing lip syncing to... is it My Immortal? Or one of those Evanescence songs. It might be Going Under. But still, it's just cringe.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on.
Anyway. So, John Hay, which is his name, was born in Stanford, Lincolnshire, and raised in the village of Outwood, West Riding of Yorkshire. Oh my goodness. His parents were engineer John Robert Hay and his wife Emily, members of the Plymouth Brethren, a conservative Protestant sect. Hay later claimed that he suffered from reoccurring religious nightmares in his childhood. Lord, have mercy. He delivered great proficiency at the piano, which he learned at home. He was fond of classical music and often attended concerts. Hi. I did say hi.
Hey.
Hi. See, I'm going to get that mixed. I'm going to get this mixed.
Just remember when you say his name. Hey.
He won a scholarship to Queen Elizabeth Grammar School, Wakefield, then to Wakefield Cathedral, where he became a choir boy. After school, he was apprenticed to a firm of motor engineers. After a year, he left that job and took jobs in insurance and advertising. At age 21, he was dismissed after being suspected of stealing from a cash box.
You don't say.
On July 6, 1934, Hay married 23-year-old Beatrice Betty Hammer. The marriage soon disintegrated. The same year that Hay was jailed for fraud, Betty gave birth while he was in prison. Although she placed the baby girl for adoption and left Hay. Wow. So she didn't even keep the baby. She was like, nope.
Mm-mm. Did he know that she was pregnant?
I bet. Mm. Hay's conservative family ostracized him from then on. Hay moved to London in 1937 and became chauffeur to William McSwan, a wealthy owner of amusement arcades. He also maintained McSwan's amusement machines. Therefore, he pretended to be a solicitor named William Cater Adamson, with offices in Chancery Lane, London, Guildford, Surrey, and Hastings, Suffolk. He sold fraudulent stock shares, purportedly from the estates of his deceased clients, at below market rates. His scam was uncovered by someone who noticed he had misspelled Guildford as Guildford without the D on his letterhead.
Oh, wow.
Hay received a 4-year prison sentence for fraud. Hay was released just after the start of the Second World War. He continued as a fraudster and was sentenced to several further terms of imprisonment.
Jesus.
Regretting that he had left victims alive to accuse him, he became intrigued by French murderer George Alexander Surratt, who had disposed of bodies using sulfuric acid. Ah. He experimented with field mice and found that it took only 30 minutes for the body to dissolve.
So how much for a human body?
We're going to find out. Hay was freed from prison in 1943 and became an accountant with an engineering firm. Soon after, by chance, he bumped into his former employer, William McSwan, in a Kensington pub. McSwan introduced Hay to his parents, Donald and Amy. McSwan worked for them by collecting rents on their London properties, and Hay became envious of his lifestyle. On September 6, 1944, McSwan disappeared. Hay later admitted he had lured McSwan into a basement on Gloucester Road, hit him over the head with a lead pipe, and then put his body in a 40-gallon drum with concentrated sulfuric acid. 2 days later, finding that McSwan's body had mostly dissolved, Hay emptied the body into a manhole, or emptied the drum into a manhole. He told McSwan's parents that their son had gone into hiding in Scotland to avoid being called up for military service. Hay then began living in McSwan's house and collecting rent for McSwan's parents. They became curious as to why their son had not returned, as the war was coming to an end. On July 2nd, 1945, he lured them to Gloucester Road by telling them their son was back from Scotland for a surprise visit. Then he killed them with blows to the head and disposed of them. Hay then stole McSwan's pension checks and sold his parents' properties for around £8,000 and moved into Onslow Court Hotel in Kensington. I think that's £8,000.
Is that the little
L-looking thing? Yeah. Hay was a gambler, and by 1947, he was running short on money. You know, people, I can't. To solve his financial problems, he founded another couple to kill and rob. Archibald Henderson and his wife Rose. After feigning interest in a house that they were selling, he was invited to the Henderson's flat by Rose to play the piano for their housewarming party. While at the flat, Hayes stole Archibald Henderson's revolver, planning to use it in his next crime. Renting a small workshop at 2 Leopold Road, Crawley, Sussex, he moved acid and drums there from Gloucester Road. Hayes was also known to have stayed at Crawley's Hotel, the George, on several occasions. On February 12, 1948, he drove Archibald Henderson to his workshop on the pretext of showing him an invention. When they arrived, Hayes shot Henderson in the head with the stolen revolver. He then lured Rose Henderson to the workshop, claiming that her husband had fallen ill, and shot her as well.
He fell ill. He's lost a lot of blood.
Yeah. After disposing of the Henderson's body in oil drums filled with acid, he forged a letter with their signatures and sold all of their possessions for £8,000, except for their cat and dog, which he kept.
That's $8,000?
Yeah. Like,
he couldn't get more?
I don't know. Well, how much was £8,000 in 1948?
Oh, probably a good 100 grand.
Hayes' next and last victim was Olive Duran Deacon, a 69, the wealthy widow of solicitor John Duran Deacon, and a fellow resident at the Onslow Court Hotel. Hay, by then, was calling himself an engineer, and Olive mentioned the idea to him that she had for artificial fingernails. He invited her down to the Leopard Road workshop on February 18, 1949, and once inside, he shot her in the back of the neck with a .38 caliber Webley revolver that he had stolen from Archibald Henderson, stripped her of her valuables, including a Persian lamb coat, and put her in the acid bath.
Oh, nice.
2 days later, Duran Deacon's first, or excuse me, let me try that again. 2 days later, Duran Deacon's friend Constant Lane reported her missing. Detectives soon discovered Hayes' record of theft and fraud and searched the workshop. Police found Hayes' attaché case containing a dry cleaner's receipt for Olive Duran Deacon's coat and also papers referring to the Hendersons and the McSwans. The workshop in Sussex, rented by Hay, did not contain a floor drain, unlike the workshop he had rented at Gloucester Road in London. He therefore disposed of the remains by pouring out the container on a rubble pile at the back of the property.
You really? Dumb fuck.
Investigation of the area by pathologist Keith Simpson found 28 pounds of human body fat, part of a human foot, human gallstones, and part of a denture, which was later identified by Olive Duran Deacon's dentist during the trial. Hay asked Detective Inspector Albert Webb during questioning, "Tell me frankly, what are the chances of anybody being released from Bradmore, a high-security psychiatric hospital?" The inspector said that he could not discuss that sort of thing. So Hay replied, "Well, if I told you the truth, would you not believe me? It sounds too fantastic to believe." Hay then confessed that he had killed Duran Deacon, the McSwans, and the Hendersons, as well as three other people, a young man named Max, a girl from Eastbourne, and a woman from Hammersmith. These claims could not be substantiated. Hay's trial was held at Louis Aziz's?
Sure.
A-S-S-I-Z-E-S. Assies?
Assizes?
Something like
that. Ass sizes? I don't know.
Hay pleaded insanity, claiming that he had drunk the blood of his victims. He said he had dreams dominated by blood as a young boy. When he was involved in a car accident in March 1944, his dream returned to him. "I saw before me a forest of crucifixes with gradually turned into trees. At first, there appeared to be dew or rain dripping from the branches, but as I approached, I realized it was blood. The whole forest began to writhe, and the trees, dark and erect, to ooze blood. A man from each tree catching the blood. When the cup was full, he approached me. 'Drink,' he said, but I was unable to move." That sounds like it came from a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Attorney General, Sir Hartley Sawcross, KC, led for the prosecution and urged the jury to reject Hayes' defense of insanity because he had acted with malice and aforethought. Well, duh. Mm-hmm. Sir David Maxwell Fife, defending, called many witnesses to attest to Hayes' mental state, including Henry Yellowlees, who claimed Hay had a paranoid constitution.
Paranoid constitution.
Yeah. What exactly is a paranoid constitution?
I don't know.
Paranoid personality disorder is a mental illness characterized by paranoid delusions.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Paranoia.
Yeah. The absolute callous, cheerful, bland, and almost friendly indifference of the accused to the crimes, which he freely admits having committed, is unique in my experience. Per Henry Yellowlees.
I don't think he could be insane because he planned ahead and bought the sulfuric acid.
Yeah, there was a lot of, there's a lot of forethought and planning into this.
I think there's definitely some kind of mental...
Well, yeah, he's not mentally right in the head.
Thing going with him.
Right. Hay apparently had believed mistakenly that if the bodies of his victims could not be found, a murder conviction would not be possible.
No body, no crime.
And a lot of people think that. And I'm here to tell you that's not true.
I know.
It took only minutes for the jury to find him guilty. Mr. Justice Minutes?
Oh, shit.
Mr. Justice Travers Humphreys sentenced him to death. On August 10th, 1949, Hay drank a brandy just before being hanged by executioner Albert Pierrier Point. The case was one of the post-1945 cases which gained considerable coverage in the newspaper, even though Hay's guilt was not questioned. The editor of the Daily Mirror, Sylvester Bolam, was sentenced to a 3-month prison term for contempt of court by describing Hugh Hay.
Hey.
As a murderer while the trial was still underway. So that's dumb. Oh. Like,
I mean, not really, because you're being accusatory and it's not been proven by the court of law. Although this is England. I don't think they cared about.
Yeah, I don't even understand that. Like,
a jury in England?
He had already kind of admitted it.
Wasn't there?
Like, he had admitted it, but... Okay. Like... I don't understand. Like, that shouldn't be, like, the same rules apply.
I didn't think the UK had juries, really. Maybe they did. I don't know. I'm dumb. I'm dumb American. I don't know.
But I love how, you know, justice is quick there.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, if you're sentenced to death here...
They don't fuck around. They're just like, you're the accused?
No.
Get over here.
No, but I'm saying once you've been found guilty, like the time from where he was convicted of...
And then hanged.
And then hung was pretty quick. Because here in the United States, like, it can take decades.
Yeah.
To be put to death. Although, that being said, there are a lot of people that have been exonerated from death row. I don't know the actual percentage.
Exactual.
But there has been, I would say, a pretty high number of people that have been exonerated.
Yeah.
After they've been on death row. Or people that have been found not guilty after they've been put to death.
Well, also, not every state has the death penalty.
No.
They would rather do a life imprisonment.
Yeah. And for some, like, there are certain crimes, in my opinion, that if there is a preponderance of evidence to prove guilt, like, I don't think there's any reason whatsoever to draw it out. Like, I think they should get death and it should be swift. Like, pedophiles, 100%, you just need to either be castrated or put to death, like, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And if, like, murderers, especially if there was a child involved and there's a preponderance of evidence, then...
So, I did a quick goog. More than half of the exonerations since 2013 have taken 25 years or more of them sitting on death row.
That is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine sitting in jail for 25 years, knowing you were innocent, and just waiting? I don't know how some people do it. Like, if you are indeed innocent, I can't imagine.
Right.
I would be such an angry person. But yet, anytime I've ever seen anybody interviewed that was on death row, especially ones that were actually innocent, they seem to be so, like, calm.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because they've just resigned themselves to their situation.
It probably is a combination of that, or they've just, they've probably given up, or they've seen the, quote, wastefulness of trying to argue.
I don't know. I'm a fighter. I would fight to the very end if I was innocent.
I would be calm about it, but I'm a fighter too. I wouldn't just sit idly by. So I, in this quick goog, I found a graph. I love a good graph.
Who doesn't?
Average time between sentencing and execution in months over a course of 30-ish years. So starting in 1986, it was around 71 to 74 months.
Okay, how many years is that?
Divide by 12.
Oh my God, you want me to do math?
6 years.
Okay, so 6 years.
And then now up to 2018, it's as high as 243 months.
Wow.
You can do that math. So yeah. You could be on death row longer than a regular sentence.
That is crazy to me. So I'm going to look up the, since 1973, at least 189 people who have been wrongly convicted and sentenced to death row in the U.S. have been exonerated. 189 people? That is fucking bananas. And I wonder if that includes people that have already been executed or people who have, or people that were just living and were able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy to me. But I, you know, I applaud England for getting it done. Like, let's just not waste time. But you know what? If you look at history in general, like whenever a death sentence has been given, mm-hmm. usually it's pretty quickly. Like back in the day, like, you know, back in the day when our country was founded.
Yeah.
If you were sentenced to death, it was like, all right, let's go outside. Like they had already, if death was even a possible sentence, they were already outside. They were already building
the platform.
Or they would just, you know, hang you from a tree. But anyway, it was still pretty quick.
Are you going to the tree?
I don't know that song. Man
call out for his love to flee? It's from The Hunger Games.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is the crazy story of John Hay.
Yay, Hay.
No. No, it's not yay, Hay. That's terrible. Like, he was a terrible person.
He was.
But, you know, they were talking about how smart he was.
Well, I mean, not everyone thinks to dissolve their evidence.
Well, obviously he didn't dissolve enough.
True.
28 pounds of human fat?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even like to think of fat on a chicken or meat in general. But to actually, just saying.
Anywho.
Anyhow.
Until next time, everyone, stay obsessed.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Criminally Obsessed. Make sure you follow us on all the socials. We are The Criminally Obsessed on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, and @criminally on Twitter. Also, be sure to come find us in our new Facebook group. You can find it by searching Obsessors or going to our Facebook page and following the tab for the group. We created this group to talk about the show, get your feedback, get show ideas, and just have great fun and support each other. Also, please be sure to rate and review us on whatever app you're listening. And if you have any show ideas or feedback or questions, you can also reach us at thecriminallyobsessed@gmail.com.